Hello, my name is Dr. Vanessa Kimball, and I am a baker. But I'm also someone who has studied and researched the impact of bread on our health for many years. I run the Sourdough School in Northamptonshire, and my specialism is bread and the gut microbiome and the impact on our mental health. But I'm also trained as a nutrigenetic practitioner, meaning I look at the way that bread impacts people according to their genetics. It helps me to personalise bread. And in this podcast, I'm going to be chatting to someone who I hope you are going to find as interesting as I did. What I'd love is for you to listen and think about the bread that you bake, eat, and share with your family. Because bread is a staple, it's our most basic food, and I believe it is the foundation to good health.
And Michel, where are you from?
I'm from France, northwest Brittany, the city Saint-Malo.
Okay. Michel, can you tell me your story of how you ended up being the president of the San Francisco Baking Institute?
Well, I came to explore what was going on in USA, and when I came, I realized it was a lot of people who were evolving in the baking industry, but didn't have as much knowledge they should have it. And that was the beauty of it, because they had no discipline to restrain themselves with the classic. And I thought it was really challenging, at the same time, you know, awakening that you see people who didn't know anything, but they have so much passion for what they want to do, from the classic baking process to going to Wiley's, bread with olive, bread with herb, and so on. And that was happening in 1986. And I thought that was a good wave to catch on it, and I stick around it.
And you were already a baker at this stage?
I graduated from France as a pastry chef. I work at a 3-star restaurant where we had to make bread, so bread was the thing I had to learn. And also I'm a cook by training, when I came here, the food was already something in my profession, so I was a little bit an advantage to other people who start, like Steve Sullivan or Nancy Silverstone, who jump in to the baking industry, but I was not used to big production. So it's where I was a good fit for them, to help them out to grow what they did.
So did you form the San Francisco Baking Institute? Was this your formation? Did you make this?
Yes. What happened is I realized a lot of people need help, and I could not be everywhere at the same time. So me and my wife, Evelyn, we decided to open a baking institute just to bring people in and more or less speed up the process to educate people as well, for somebody who want to go to the industry, somebody already in the industry, or even amateur want to bake home. So we opened the school with no sponsorship, because we want to have the freedom to teach whatever we wanted. And we opened that 20 years ago.
You have people traveling from all over the world to come to you.
Yeah, we actually had somebody from England last week.
I probably know them.
Well, he's a chef. He worked in the restaurant, and he came here to learn. He went to a different school, but he thought that here be the best for the bread.
Coming round to bread, the program for the BBC Radio 4 food program is about sourdough.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to ask you some questions. I'm not necessarily sure you know all the answers to them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to, but I'd be interested in your perspective, mm-hmm, and what you feel is the case. From where I'm standing, I trained in Southwest France,
mm-hmm,
in the Dordogne, in a traditional wood-fired oven bakery. The pain de levain is something I grew up with. I'm very used to that kind of fresh French bread.
Mm-hmm.
the French will claim that sourdough was theirs. This was originated from them. Interestingly, people in San Francisco will claim that the sourdough came from the gold miners at the Klondike. Do you happen to have a perspective on the history of sourdough and how it became so iconic and the king of breads?
What? I mean, first of all, the sourdough, if we call that sourdough, walis, I think the Egyptians figured it out because they had some fermentation happening in their bread. And anybody who was making bread with no commercial yeast, because it didn't exist, did somewhat sourdough, if we can call that, or walis. So for the French to claim that they made the sourdough, I think it's a little pushy, because if you look at the Italian, the panettone, they do also that. So I think it's an evolution of what, say, they figure out how to do fermentation to make the bread more airy and not so doughy and easy to consume. So now for San Francisco to end up with a sourdough, I'm not sure. A lot of people have a different version on that one. San Francisco, for some reason, had a lot of bakery before, run by Italian. And they're the one who actually maintained the sourdough culture here, because there was Basque, Italian, and some Irish. So the Italian, for sure, and the Basque was consuming bread. So it's why the bread industry was moved and were very popular in San Francisco. So like when you see Boudin sourdough, is actually the first owner was from the Basque country.
And this sourdough now in San Francisco is an iconic, they don't even call it sourdough, they just call it sour.
Mm-hmm.
How does that differ from the French pain de levain?
I think the big difference between the today sourdough, I cannot talk for the previous sourdough San Francisco, but today sourdough, it become like you say, is more like a iconic for tourists and people from San Francisco still consuming that bread. It's very, very sour, and the pH is really there. And
sorry, can you say that again? Because there was a noise on here. I'm listening all the time to the recording as well.
I mean, the difference here in San Francisco is that the pH is really like 3, for instance, 3.5. So very, very acidic. And they use acetic acid because the way they do the mother, what they call the mother, is actually with a high protein flour. And they actually ferment that mother in the cooler. So as you ferment that in a cold temperature, you have very, very dense mother. As the French, they usually do that at room temperature, a little bit more water, and the flour, the protein is not as strong, so you have a little bit more lactic acid. And I think the French try to have some fermentation, acidic fermentation, but the main thing, the focus is to make the bread rise. And here, the focus is to make the bread sour. And if you look at those two bread, one is really dense, the other one is a little more chewy, more water. As in San Francisco, the average is about 60% water absorption and with a very, very strong flour. That's a typical sourdough of San Francisco. Now, there has been an evolution with that type of sourdough.
Can you go back and say that again? So a typical San Francisco sourdough will be about a 60% hydration? 65.
Protein.
So if I can go back and get you to tell me again that main difference with the hydration and...
Yeah, the sourdough in San Francisco, most of the time, the water content in the dough, final dough, is about 65%. But 65% with very, very strong flour. 13-14%. As France, they use more water, and the protein is a lot more, less, it's about 11 or 12, but weak. And so it's not as strong. You have two different gluten factors there. The U.S. Standard for San Francisco sourdough, they actually shape the dough and proof the dough overnight for 12 hours. At very low temperature, about 38 degrees Fahrenheit. and they proof after that at 100 degrees and they bake right away. As the French tendency to proof either room temperature, but not cold temperature. And it could be 50 and a lot more water. And they bake in most of the time they bake in the deck oven, as the sourdough in San Francisco, most of the time they bake in the rack oven. Give you two extreme different crusts. One is crusty, the other one is more leathery. The leathery is the San Francisco. The French is a little more crusty. The last one, which is important, that since you're dealing with two different level of water, the one with more water, you have more open crumb, more gummy, soft crumb, as the one from San Francisco is a little tighter and, you know, not as chewy than compared to the French one.
That brings me neatly round to Tartine,
mm-hmm.
which of course is where I'm hanging out, and mm-hmm. I'm off to the beach with Chad on Monday, so I'm really looking forward to that. Tartine is a hybrid. He's taken so many of the French principles and brought in some of the San Francisco principles, yeah. and come up with something that's actually incredibly unique.
Mm-hmm.
And his bread is very iconic, to the point now where people call their breads tartinesque style.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen? You must have seen Chad. He's someone who's changed the baking scene. Has tartine made as much impact here as it has in the UK?
I mean, tartine definitely. Chad definitely made an impact here, but he came after the impact was made in artisan bread with other player, and the player is like Steve Sullivan from Acme Bread Company. Then you have Sammy Freddy. Then you have some other small one who help also to make it. And in south of California, then you have La Brea with Nancy Zifferson. Those actually brought people to consume better bread. Then when Chad opened on his bakery, first in Point Rey, then he was doing mainly farmer markets. So his quantity is limited. So his style definitely changed and brought an alert to people who could tendency forget what a good bread is. And he created definitely a big follower with people who have passion for good bread. The quantity of water he put on his bread is unique in a sense. Some other people have done that also, but not to the volume that he has a follower. For some reason, people grab on him and just did a follow-up. But it was definitely an effort of many other bakery in the USA who actually brought people to appreciate a bread like him. Let's say if he had came with a dark bread and gooey bread, I mean, kind of soft crumb like that by himself, he would have struggled. The education was not there. So he came at the right time to push that at the retail level too. That's the retail level.
That high hydration that Chad sort of come in with, sorry, I'm going to move my, that high hydration level that Chad kind of came in with, you said there were other people who were doing that?
Yeah, if you look at Richard Boudon from, upstate New York, he's been doing those bread. Actually, Chad went and learned from him also. So, you had a few pocket of baker who was doing high hydration for the bread. Like I say, San Francisco was a great city to have better understanding of what he was after on the customer point of view. And it was the right time, you know, where when he set up the bakery in on 18, the neighborhood was changing. It was new kids coming through it because the rent was allowing them to be around there. Then so he got overnight, he got support from a follower who was there waiting for a good food to be around it.
We've got this unique thing at the moment where we have these traditional breads meeting with microbiological cutting edge science. Is there other things that are exciting you that are coming out? The information about sourdough that's coming through. Does that excite you as a baker?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, of course.
What is it that's really kind of, have you, you know, there's lots of studies coming out. Is there anything that's really kind of blown you away?
No, I mean, we've been working, let's say, in the ancient grain in reaction to the fermentation for many years. I mean, we've been on for 10 years. So now it's coming more to the mainstream, which is interesting to watch and appreciate it because the media take care of it. But last study was made. What we're waiting for is somebody put this. We really wanted somebody scientifically put a stamp on it, on what we did believe for a long time. Meaning that if you have a dose made properly with enough water for good fermentation, a pH balanced with the long fermentation after that, you can consume bread even if you have discomfort with the standard bread. That's what we've been waiting for someone with solid backup to say this is better for your body to eat that bread than the bread was not have long fermentation or not enough water. Because we're assuming, but we know it, but we cannot prove it. That's what excites me about it.
The problem we have is the people who are doing that kind of study are being financed by the big money who don't necessarily want that to be out there. They want to kind of develop some stuff that some of the scientists that I talk to are working for the really, really big universities, and they're being financed by big bread companies, and predominantly in Germany. And that science is not for the artisan baker, it's for them to develop new products to sell to the mass market, and they will pick bits out of it, like the yogurt, you know, the probiotic yogurt. So there's some really interesting studies coming out at the moment, but it's applying them to our bread.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing we need to realize is either the concept of baking change and we end up with large small retail bakery all over the place, and then we can supply bread for everybody, or high fashion bread educate the consumer to demand it, and the big producer will line up behind it. And it did happen here in USA, where, you know, 15 years ago, or it was no artisan bread in some area. Okay, it was just pocket. It was San Francisco, New York, Chicago, Seattle, Los Angeles, and the rest of the country had none. So through the large demand, because in geographic, what happened, people from California moved to Arizona, or they moved to Utah because the real estate was better, and those states attract company to move there. So people move, but those people move with the diet. They want to keep it. And the bread was one of it. So all of a sudden, you have an evolution of good quality bread demand by the consumer. And to match that to the demand, then you had company, the first one who started was La Brea Baking Company, who, because the demand was there, then they started to do artisan bread, no chemical, large production, and do bar bake. That's the only way to supply, you know, the main customer of large volume through distribution like that. So, and if we don't change to small retail bakery, the big boy should learn from the small guy who actually created the demand and follow through it and help. We have to understand also that the people in charge now of, let's say, baking industry or the industry are changed too. They change. They're younger. They professional, they want good food also. So the philosophy has changed too. From those people, they might want to do the right thing. So we have to hope for that too. As if you look at the large company, used to be for people who didn't care for the food, they just want to care for the success of the company and the money. But you have now the new generation who actually are more like everybody on the street who want, okay, social life. They want a good life. They want a family, but the main thing is food. Food is actually the the talk of every table. I mean, everywhere people talk about food. Never, you look at the media, they talk about food.
It's very true. That brings me quite neatly to my kind of like last question. Where's the future of sourdough now?
The future of sourdough, actually, if you had asked me about 5-8 years ago, I will say I'm concerned, because artisan bread was a movement in, let's say, 80-85, weren't quite a bit done to a certain volume where people start to have shortcut, because artisan bread was only through distribution. Nobody had store. So due to that, as the quantity expand and the distribution drive the production, the biggest problem, people were like want the bread, the other people. They're not bad people, but they have to demand, they have to respond to the demand of the distribution. So the distribution drive the production, drive the shelf life of the product. So all of a sudden they change everything in order to facilitate the distribution and the shelf life. And then the artisan bread was supposed to be chemical free and so on. They start to expand more and more and more, and you had more and more bigger player who came with big investment. The small guy like, let's say, Cipani, La Brea, Grace Baking Company, La Briola, all those get bought by big trust fund money people. And you know the first thing they want, it's throughput. So I was concerned that the quality of the bread was actually going down, and it did go down. Lucky us, you know, what happened is that traffic became a problem in the city. Younger generation want to live in the city. They don't want to live in a suburb. They want to have a social life after work. So, and since the traffic is a problem, parking is a problem, then you start to have more and more retail bakery open. So the retail allow you to do a higher quality product because you don't have to worry about the distribution. The customer come to you. And so because of that, the quality went back up because of those small retail and farmer market where baker bake and you have a great product.
So it's really the demographics of human movement that actually drive the bread.
Correct. And give the potential of a baker to be a retail baker. Because if 5 o'clock, before 5 o'clock, city go to sleep, because everybody leave, they went to suburb, and suburb, they go to supermarket. Now, 5 o'clock, the city start booming with people coming out of work, and they're in the city, then the bar, then the restaurant, they in the bakery, they go everywhere. And bakery now used to be a place where you go in the morning, you buy your goodie and you go home and you go buy a birthday cake and stuff. Bakery is a club, is like a bar, a club. You go during the day. It's a salon day of, but the modern, more relaxed, where you can go have a tartine, or you can have a small sandwich and have a pastry in the middle of the day. So for us, we experience at Bieber Street is we entertain people who don't want to go to the restaurant. They just want to have a place where they're not bothered by the waiter who want to push it. So it's a bakery adapt to their life.
That sounds good. That's it should be.
Yeah. Your salon day used to exist and they disappear. I know in France, salon day used to be a place where you consume pastry all day long. And they kind of disappear. And there was just a boulangerie bakery. You go, you buy, you leave.
Ça revient.
It's good.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed listening to that podcast as much as I enjoyed chatting with my guests, then you might like to find out a little bit more about what I do. Well, I teach courses both online and in person at thesourdoughschool.com. I also write regularly for sourdough.co.uk. And I have a couple of Instagram accounts that you might like to follow. Sourdough School, Sourdough Club. Oh, and I have a personal one, Vanessa Kimball. I really do love to hear people's thoughts and feedback about, well, the books I write, the podcast, the features, or if you have any questions, don't hesitate to get in touch. Thank you for listening.